Hey, thanks so much for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Vital Point Church. My name is Ron. I'm the pastor here at Vital Point. We believe that it's important for people to explore and grow in their faith. And my hope, my prayer is that this message that you're listening to will draw you closer to better understanding how you can live out your faith journey in the everyday life. Sit back and enjoy. So today, I've got the pleasure and the joy of talking about grief. It's an interesting conversation this morning. We're in a Triggered series, and last week we talked and looked at the topic of fear, and we looked at it through the lens of an Old Testament prophet by the name of Elijah from 1 Kings chapter 18 and 19. Today we're going to be taking a focus on a different Old Testament prophet by the name of Jeremiah. Next week we're going to dip back into Elijah's life, and we're going to talk about loneliness. Loneliness. You can be surrounded by a lot of people, and you can still be lonely. And we're seeing loneliness become a thing over the last number of years, and we're going to dive in and talk about that. So today, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the verses that I'm going to use as our conversation piece, and then I'm going to give some opening comments and then teach on these verses. Jeremiah chapter 17, verses 7 and 8. You might want to write these verses down for later. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is the Lord. He is like a tree planted by water that sends out its roots by the stream and does not fear when heat comes, for its leaves remain green. And it is not anxious in the year of drought, for it does not cease to bear fruit. Powerful verses that I pray blessing on you as you listen to those verses. My hope today, as Kath mentioned earlier in our service, is that you will find some hope and some encouragement as we talk about grief. I looked up the definition of grief this week just to give clarity for myself, because sometimes we can assume what it means, but this is what I found. Deep sorrow often caused by death. When I thought about the idea of deep sorrow that we experience, I thought about it from an image of our hearts and our souls being squeezed out. And that when the hearts and souls of an individual are squeezed or pressured, there's a sense of being trapped in a dark cave. Over the years, I've had the privilege of standing with many people in the dark cave of grief. I've learned a lot from watching people navigate grief. One of the biggest things that I've learned is that we all handle grief different. How we walk through it can be so different than the next person. I've legit watched a wife bury a husband and then spend the next months or years leaving his stuff in place as a reminder, as a visual representation of the loss of her husband. I've watched other women who have buried a husband, and the next day his things are packed up and off to Goodwill. I'm not sure what that actually means, but I don't know if she's happy or not, but that's just a demonstration of a different approach to grief. There's no timeline on grief. We all pace through grief at a different speed. I've also noticed that there is a healthy way and an unhealthy way to grieve. I would even be bold to say that there is a right way and a wrong way. And I know that this is not a common belief or an understanding of grief, but I hope you'll stay with me and hear me out as I consider the right way and a wrong way to the process of grief. When I think about grief, I look at it from the lens of my own experience. I, for myself, have walked the path of grief. If you've been around Vital Point for any length of time, or you've been close enough to me, you've probably heard a bit of my faith journey, my personal story. When I was 11 years old, my dad died of cancer. He was 36 years old. It was early 80s, 1981. We didn't have the systems in place that are in place now for children who lose a parent. The tools that are available now were not available in the early 80s. So we just went back to life as if nothing ever happened. On the Monday morning after we buried my dad, I just went back to school. I got a card from a teacher, from Mr. Orser, my French teacher, and he just gave a bit of condolences in a card. For many years, and I must say also in the midst of that, because my mom is probably watching today, should acknowledge my mom, she was young at the time, and she did her absolute best with two young children, because my brother was about 5 or 6 years old at the time. For many years, I hid grief deep within my soul. I hid it inside of myself, and it manifested itself sometimes through my frustration and anger. I can recall sitting across from a therapist when I was 36 years old, trying to figure out why I could not enjoy my two sons. We have two sons. They're grown now. I couldn't figure out why. What was wrong with me? I would go to hockey games and go to soccer games, and they both played a significant level of sport that was, you know, competitive. And our oldest son ended up playing a bit of junior C. And so there was an element of expectation in the hockey world and soccer. My youngest son rode dirt bikes and actually even raced occasionally, which I totally lived through him, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. There was times, though, that in the midst of the fun, I wasn't able to sit in the moment and enjoy it. I would get frustrated. I would get angry when I wouldn't see them play hard or work hard. We would drive an hour away to race dirt bikes, and he didn't give his best effort. I would be frustrated and angry. It was revealed to me in the process of sitting with a therapist that my unresolved issues or conflict with grief and how it had settled into my soul was an unhealthy way, and I went into the next 10 years sitting with a therapist, unpacking this and dealing with this in my life. Last year, I was introduced to a new friend. His name is Kirk Goodman. Kirk was a fellow I was introduced to in a coaching course online. We were partnered up together. And if you've ever done an online course and never met somebody, you're like, oh boy, what am I getting myself into? But we were paired up, and Kirk ended up becoming a very, very good friend and still is today. And he was actually supposed to be here this morning. I was going to interview him on his grieving process because in the middle of our coaching course, his wife passed away of cancer. And we walked the path of grief together. He now refers to it as good grief. He's now interacting with others who have lost loved ones, and he's calling it good grief. I've watched people walk the path of grief, and I've actually been in it myself. And I would say this, if you believe that grief is something that you get over, you're setting yourself up for a long process of pain and confusion. You really are. If someone actually says to you, just get over it, back away very slowly and smile. And just remove yourself from that moment. Because the reality is that grief is something you pass through. And as you begin to realize that grief is something you pass through, you recognize that grief actually becomes part of your story. It doesn't need to define you. It doesn't need to define you. My grief for a long period of time defined me. I used it in my life to define my frustration and my anger, and I'll unpack that a little bit more in a bit. Kirk, my friend, who talks about good grief, sees it as part of his story, and he sees it as something that he is passing through. Now, I need to pause here because talking about grief, often caused by the loss of a loved one or death, we recognize, okay, that's part of life. That's part of the natural process of our journey as being humans. But what about the last 2 years? What about the last 2 years? What about the last 2 years where many of us have experienced a different form of grief? Many of us find ourselves in the dark cave of grief because we have significant loss of a different kind. Still causes deep sorrow, though. A couple retires February 2020, excited to travel the world. They saved up their pennies so that they could travel for a few months and just enjoy the first few months of their retirement. March 2020 comes around, their plans are canceled. You can guarantee they're grieving. I facilitated a group of people before Christmas that I didn't know, talking to them about grief. I was invited in by someone from our church to speak to this group of people about grieving. And in the midst of sharing and facilitating, a woman said to me in the middle of it, she says, I've been grieving the loss of my mom, but I'm also carrying an incredible amount of guilt because they wouldn't let me in. And I had promised that I would be with her when she passed away, but they wouldn't let me be with her. Which begs to ask the question, have we elevated the physical needs over every other need? But that's for another conversation. Students missing out on a grade 8 graduation. Listen, I watched it all unfold on social media, how creative we were. Let's celebrate, do a drive-by. I applaud the creativity, but it still sucks. Right? Couples having their first baby, unable to have loved ones in the hospital with them to celebrate. The business that you dreamed to start kicked off in March 2020 and didn't get off the ground. Some imagined that they would be married until death do them part, and they've just signed the divorce papers. I've grieved this past 2 years deeply to the point where I said to my wife, I said, I'm done. I've invested in people's lives. I've rearranged schedules. I've stayed up late with people on the phone and on Zoom, investing. And then someone will come to me and say, I'm out. I no longer want to be part of this church. You can guarantee there's a lot of pastors grieving. Make no mistake about it. to the point where I was grieving so deeply over one that I said to my wife, that's it, I'm not going to invest in people any longer. Lasted about 20 minutes. Our cave of grief can be dark. So what do we do? How do we handle this? Whether you've lost a loved one recently or whether you've grieving something in this past 2 years, how do we get to the place of good grief? Well, I believe it's important that we step back and ask a very difficult question then that I believe that we need to ask ourselves in this season. And it is this question: what am I putting my trust in that will help me find my way through grief? What am I putting my trust in that will help me move through my grief? See, here's the thing. Over the last 2 years, our lives have been interrupted by a pandemic, interrupted by rules and regulations. We've faced tough pressures and difficulties. And the realization, if anything else has come out of this, it's revealed to us as we look in the mirror that interruptions and pain reveals things about ourselves and about God. The things that we thought we built our lives on that were secure are no longer secure. The things that we thought were certain are no longer certain. I have been on Zoom calls one-on-one with people, well put together people that from the outside look all put together and they're broken and hurt and grieving because the things that they had built their lives on, the things that they had trusted in are no longer secure and they're crumbling and falling apart. See, loss and pain and interruption is the great revealer. And it reveals what we're actually putting our trust in our lives. I want to propose to you today, to the answer to that question is the verses that I read for you. It's the verses that I read for you from Jeremiah chapter 17. That as we consider what we will build our lives on is that we might consider the idea or the truth that we build our lives on the trust in God. Jeremiah 17 verse 7. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is the Lord. Now, just for clarity purposes, that means both men and women. So just both genders. So just be clear on that. But that's the expression in the ESV. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is the Lord's. Blessed. Blessed. Now, when you think about the word blessed, what comes to your mind? We often use it from a phrase or an idea of someone who's got a lot of material things. They're so blessed. Or you watch someone that's got so many gifts and talents and abilities and makes you sick, but you look at them and you say, they're blessed, right? It's like, why did God drop all that into that person and not give some of it to me, right? We look at those things. The word blessed, we must understand it from a perspective of the reality of a blessed life is the power and the presence of God and the favor of God in our lives. As we trust in him, we therefore are blessed. It's the strengthening of a muscle. It's the working out of a muscle that becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. Blessed. Blessed is the person who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is the Lord. Now, Jesus actually reshapes our idea of grief and mourning. He uses this in the beginning of a section of Matthew chapter 5, verse 4, where he says this, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Right? So Jesus is actually taking our idea of blessing and reshaping it. He's taking it to a place where we understand that we can find the blessing in the darkness of the cave of grief. He's reshaping it to the place where we understand that we can discover things about ourselves and about God, and we can experience the comfort in the midst of our trusting. Blessed is those. Strength, power, presence is those who mourn. I love the fact that Jesus doesn't try to wash over it or ignore it. He leans into it. Blessed are those who mourn. It's a reality and part of our lives. See, Jeremiah says, blessed is the person who trusts in the Lord. See, in the cave of grief, we ask ourselves this very tough question, and you can be a person of faith or not. It's the question, can I actually trust God with this particular pain or this particular grief? Or do I have to depend upon myself in the midst of the darkness of the cave? Will God let me down? Can I trust in him with the big picture of my life? Can I trust him with the small things in my life? See, when we begin to trust in God, what we're doing is we're putting the character of God online. We're putting the faithfulness of God on the line. And we say, ask ourselves, can I trust? See, when you think about what we place our trust in the midst of our grief, it's literally giving authority to something. So when I think about the reality of trusting God in the midst of my grief, what I'm doing is I'm giving God, I'm trusting God, I'm giving God the authority in my life to help me understand what my grief is all about. what the working of God is in my life. So I give God that authority. If grief is unchecked, and if we don't put boundaries on it, what we end up doing is giving grief the authority in our life, so therefore it begins to dictate how I live. Because what has authority in your life dictates how you live, right? So if I give the authority over to God and trust in Him, therefore I can see and navigate through grief differently. But if it's left to myself, then that's a dangerous place to be, because then I've got to sort it out on my own. Therefore, sometimes I give grief the authority, which then I give the excuses for the way I live. Okay. So think about it like this. Someone who's grieving and has an unhealthy perspective of the pain and the grief in their life, and if it has too much authority, if we're not careful, have too much authority, we then use it as an excuse for our behavior. So the person that begins to abuse substance, there's substance abuse there. Sometimes you'll hear this. They'll say, well, I'm grieving, I'm in pain, so therefore I can abuse this. Or maybe I can mistreat others because I'm grieving, right? Or maybe they'll say things like, well, I can live however I want to deal with my grief because I'm grieving, I'm in pain. So they begin to use it as an excuse to live however they want. Or to take it in extreme cases, you see this, and I know we've got kids in the room, so parents, good luck explaining this. But what happens is sometimes we excuse it to have sex with whoever we want. Right? No one's going to tell me how to live, because I will go and have sex with whoever, whenever, because it covers up my pain. But what's happening is the grief is actually dictating and giving us authority, using it as an authority to show how I live, and we excuse it. And we can see this actually with all of the topics in which we're dealing with: fear, grief, loneliness, anxiety, depression, stress. We can use it for all these. See, when we are growing in our trust in God, we gain an understanding of the closeness and the provision of our pain, of God in our pain. Grief left to fate and to chance and to self only creates chaos, because there's no greater purpose to it. We have to sort it out on our own. And we're left in the darkness. The imagery is, one is, I trust God with my grief. So I hold my grief out to Him, and He begins to shed light on it in the journey of I'm journeying through grief, however long that may be, that there is an essence of saying, God, I trust you with this. But if we are holding on to it tightly, and it's like groping in the darkness of the cave, our eyes are closed and we're trying to find our way through it, and we just find ourselves stuck. So the question is, in the midst of our pain and grief, how do we, like, can I trust God? Can I give Him the authority of this? I wanted to give some perspective on God, and we say this often, we're all at different stages of our journey of faith, I get that, and some of you watching online or in the room may not even be followers of Jesus, and you're still investigating. But let me give you a beautiful picture of who God is and why we can trust in Him. The psalmist in Psalm 56, verse 8 says this: "You have kept count of my tossing, but put my tears in your bottle. Are they not in your book?" You have kept count of my tossing, put my tears in your bottle. This is the psalmist David writing this. What I love about the subtlety of this verse is that it gives us a picture of the closeness of God in the midst of our pain. That as the tears drip off of my chin in my grief, as I mourn at times uncontrollably, He comes close enough to me to collect my tears. He watches as I toss and turn in the night. He has a ledger with all those nights that I've tossed and turned. I want to share a story with you that happened to me a couple of years ago. Desiree and I were on our vacation. We vacationed in Point Clark. We rent a cottage up there. It's a perfect little cottage for us. We love it. We claim it's ours. The owners don't know it, but it's ours. We were sitting on the front porch, and we can hear this mom coming with a child down the road in front of our cottage. Yes, I said our cottage. She was coming down the road, and the toddler was losing her mind, like freaking out. I mean, nails on a chalkboard type freaking out. And as they got closer, we realized that the toddler didn't want to go to the beach in that particular way. And she was screaming her head off. I don't want to go this way. And she's freaking out. And the mom, as she got in front of her cottage, she said, "Oh, sweetie, I know you feel this in your body. Mommy understands. But mommy chose to go this way to the beach. And in that split second, I felt the whisper of God inside my soul. And it was as if God was saying, that's how I see your grief, Ron. That's how I see your pain. Is the closeness and the awareness of that mom. I learned a lesson from that mom in that moment. Oh, sweetheart, I know you feel it in your body. Mommy understands. The image I had in my mind as I thought about the closeness and the tears and the tossing was standing before Jesus one day. We'll stand before Jesus one day. And I almost envisioned him with his arms stretched out, with his nail-pierced hands. And in one hand, he's got a bottle of my tears, and the other, he's got a ledger of my tossing and turning. And then he drops them. Because he's setting up his eternal kingdom, his new heaven and new earth, where there'll be no more pain, no more grief, no more tears. And he embraces me. He drops them and says, welcome home. See, there's an understanding in this moment of the closeness of trusting God in the midst of our pain and in the midst of our grief. But Jeremiah does something for us that I've never noticed before. I never noticed this before. Notice what it says. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is the Lord's. Two different words, in and is. Let me reflect on this for a moment. God gifts us his trust as we demonstrate our continued trust in him. Stay here with me on this. There's something powerful that happens when someone says to you, I trust you. Have you ever had that? They give you an assignment at work. I trust you with this. Or someone gives you something of value and says, can you hold this for me? And they say, I trust you with this. There's something about that moment that fills us up. Think about Jesus. When he walked on this earth, when he walked on earth, he would invite people to follow him. Think about the 12 disciples, his inner circle. He would say to them, come follow me. We often talk about this idea of trusting in Jesus. And that's the point of this church, just so you know, is that we want you to trust in Jesus and walk in relationship with him and become a disciple and apprentice of Jesus and learn to have his life focused in you. But do you know that when he offers the, hey, follow me, that is filled with, hey, I trust in you. I trust you. Come follow me. Why did the disciples drop everything and quickly follow Jesus? It's because they heard the words of trust. As we learn to trust in him, our trust becomes his. He gifts us with it and fills us. Where do we get it? Verse 8. I know, you're waiting for this. Verse 8, we begin to see the reality of this. Look what it says. He is like a tree planted by the water, who sends out its roots by the stream and does not fear when heat comes, for its leaves remain green, and it is not anxious in the year of drought, for it does not cease to bear fruit. The water is the source for the tree. The tree sends its roots out towards the water. It draws up the water, and then therefore the tree becomes filled and saturated with the water so that the leaves are green and it bears fruit no matter what the season comes, whether there's heat or drought. The extension of the roots is what fills up the tree and nourishes it. The water nourishes it, which means this, that our trust-infused life is not always developed in the season of grief. It's developed in the daily patterns and rhythms of our lives where we learn to trust in God before the pain hits. We learn to trust God in the everyday aspects of our lives, the rhythms and patterns. When things are going well, I'm still trusting. I'm learning to trust. I'm extending my roots out to the water source so that I might be filled, so that when the pain comes, I'm prepared. Let me illustrate it this way. Think about it. There's a young couple in our church that just had their very first baby. And I was thinking about this illustration. They had a cute little girl. I was thinking about this. Imagine a young couple, they're having a baby, their first baby, and the soon-to-be mom is planning to have the baby in the hospital. Okay, great. Now, probably a couple months before that, what has she done? She's probably packed a bag, right? 2 months before. The bag is prepared. It's ready to go, right? So when the pain comes and the moment comes for the baby to arrive, what do? They just pick up that bag and they head out the door. Imagine with me for a moment if they didn't pack the bag. That poor dad-to-be is going to have to figure out how to read the soon-to-be mom's mind, right? Right? And all she's doing is looking at him in pain, and he's trying to navigate, like, what do I pack? What do I pack? Right? And as he's running around trying to pack the bag, you can be guaranteed they're going to get to the hospital, and what? He's forgotten something. Because he's supposed to read her mind. Well, guys, we all know that's impossible, right? Even though our wives expect it. We can't figure it out. Right? When the pain hits, when the moment she says, we're going to the hospital now, he doesn't have to think. He just grabs that bag and heads out. See, our patterns of learning to trust in God and with our entire lives is preparation for those moments when the pain comes, when the difficulty hits, so that our leaves remain green and we bear fruit, no matter what our external circumstances are. When our trust in God begins to expand, we begin to see our grief different. It's good grief. Good grief says, I'm not going to waste this opportunity for the potential of learning what the blessing of God is in the midst of it. Does it mean there's no pain? There's pain. Does it mean there's no loss? There's loss. Of course there is. Does it mean that you pick up your bootstraps and grin your way through it? No. That's ridiculous. See, mourning and grieving is a necessary process to the blessings of God. I need you to hold on to that for a moment. It is a necessary piece of our journey of moving through the grief in order to learn what the blessings are. It's like the joy in grief. In order to know joy, we have to know sadness. It's part of the package deal, what it means to be human. So as we learn to trust, we begin to expand our understanding of the one that we can trust in the midst of the pain so that we can experience good grief, so that our grief doesn't have to define us. It actually becomes part of our story. Okay, but wait, there's more. I feel like that's an info commercial for you. Wait, there's more. If you apply for this in the next 2 minutes, you'll get... I know there's a heaviness in the room, right? It's like, Here's the other piece of this. Grief, good grief, is always processed in community. Okay? Good grief is processed in community. Look at this verse that Paul writes in Romans chapter 12, verse 15. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. The section of my Bible, it actually says, marks of a true Christian, right above this. There are some things that you do not need to pray about. Did you know that? I know that's not a popular thought for pastors to say, but you, like legit. If you see someone in your life that's grieving, weeping in the midst of the grief, it's not like you go, I'm going to pray about it. Oh, God, do you want me to go? No. It says, weep with those who weep. It is coming alongside. Why? Why? Because in our process of grieving, it involves community, because when we involve community, it helps carry the load and the burden of the grief. So that we walk together, arm in arm, carrying the burden. It is the design of who God has made us to be. If you're a follower of Jesus today, an expression of your faith is to weep with those who weep. This is hard though, right? This is so hard. When you think about this is difficult, though, because pride gets in the way, right? So when we're going through grief, what we end up often doing is we often say, well, I don't want to appear needy. I don't want to burden anybody. They've got their stuff. And so what we do is we almost push that person away when we should be receiving them in, right? When I think about it in the context of a church context, when I think about it with a faith community, when we are not involving others in our process of grief, we're robbing them of being the church. We're robbing people of the opportunity to be the church. If you are a person on the other side of it where you're going and you're looking at someone who's grieving, you kind of sometimes take the posture like this. I hear this sometimes. It's like, well, you know what? If I get too involved, they might suck the life out of me. You know, or they might cross some of my boundaries that I have in my life, and I wouldn't want anyone to cross my boundaries. I'm not making fun of boundaries. We need them. I get that. But when you think about a life of faith, it's not measured by the fatness of your faith. It's measured by a faith that is poured out for others. I need to say that again. A life of faith is not a measure of, is not measured by the fatness of your faith. It's measured by a faith that is poured out for others. I think we've been a bit duped at times to believe that our faith is about consuming podcasts and taking in as many Sunday services as possible to feed ourselves. And that's critical and important. I'm not taking that away from us. But a faith that is fully spent for others is a faith that is alive and mature and strong. Weep with those who weep is pouring our lives into the others so that others may be strengthened. And here's the cool thing about it is that if you're wondering if you can trust in God and that his trust will become your trust, the evidence of that trust shows up in one another. So that when I weep with those who weep, that is the evidence of the trust of God in the community of faith. So when you think about it from a perspective of faith, when you think about it from a perspective of understanding how to live out our faith, it's this idea that when someone in your life that maybe doesn't know Jesus yet, and they're weeping, and they're going through a place of mourning and grief and so on, is that we can come alongside of them and be Jesus to them to carry the load and the burden of weeping. Now, here's where we're going to land as we bring our conversation to an end and create some space for us this morning. Grief is deep sorrow, often caused by death. But what I'm convinced of is that there's some of us here that are filled with turmoil and confusion in your heart and soul. You're squeezed in right now by your grief. You're tired and you're worn out. I get it. I see it. The changing tides of rules and closures and recommendations, we're grieving. We're trying to sort through. We're trying to find our way through it. And for many of us, we've found ourselves bitter and angry. What I want you to hear today is that your grief no longer has to define you. I'm not talking about grief being gone. What I'm talking about is the ability to walk through it, trusting in God, so that your marriage will be healthy, your friendships can be healthy, your workplace, your walk with Jesus can be healthy. Your church life can be healthy. Because if you're stuck in the cave of grief, you can be guaranteed that those things are being damaged because you're standing in it. Unhealthy grief and healthy grief. Jesus said these words in Matthew 11. He says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest." What a promise. What a promise. Come to me, Jesus says. If you're weary and burdened, I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and I will find you, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, my burden is light. See, if we hold our grief too tightly, we are unable to put the yoke on our shoulders. And when we put the yoke on our shoulders, it's an image that we don't often think about in our context, in our modern day context. But the reality of it is we put Jesus' yoke upon ourselves and we walk in pace with him and we learn from him because he's walked the path of grief himself. He stood in front of a tomb of his buddy Lazarus and he wept, he mourned, he grieved, and he can walk with us. So my encouragement for you today in the midst of your grief is, what would it look like to say, I'm going to lay it down in order to pick up this yoke so I can learn from Jesus? And what you will discover is that you can trust in God, for he is faithful.